Librarians fight as controversy grows over eliminating all federal funding for America's libraries and museums. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, never miss a show. Download the WJCT app and listen anytime. You can also stream the show right now live on our Facebook page. Just ahead, why President Trump's proposed budget would eliminate funding for museums and libraries, arts and humanities. What do you think about that? Get on the line now as we discuss it. 549-2937. Then later, April is National Donate Life Month. All about the importance of organ donation and the upcoming Katie Ride for Life. Plus, don't miss our conversation with local Jeopardy winner. She's JU English professor Julie Brannon. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, President Donald Trump has released his 2018 budget blueprint, and it eliminates four of America's independent cultural agencies: the National Endowment for the Arts, the National Endowment for the Humanities, the Institute of Museum and Library Services, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Now, this budget proposal is still just a blueprint. In some sense, it serves as a political statement from the new administration. Funding priorities will undoubtedly shift ahead of a more detailed draft expected in May, and then again as the proposal is turned into appropriations bills this fall. Still, advocates for these arts and culture institutions are sounding the alarm as the nation's librarians in particular gear up for a marathon fight to preserve federal funding for libraries, along with research, the arts, and the humanities. We're beginning the hour with a closer look as we welcome to the show Brenda Simmons-Hutchins. She's a board member with the Jacksonville Public Library, and she's on the line. Brenda, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa. How are you this morning?
Doing great. And here's our question to callers. What do you think about the Trump budget? It would eliminate all funding for America's libraries and museums. Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, or weigh in on Facebook. And so, Brenda, the nation's librarians are fighting this. They're going to be lobbying hard to preserve a $210 million federal budget for the nation's library system. First, let's talk about what's at stake. The Trump budget would eliminate funding, in essence, kill the Institute of Museum and Library Services. In your view, how important is that funding, and what does that agency do to help libraries stay open and stock library shelves across the country?
Let me begin with the word vital, crucial, utterly necessary. Libraries of today and libraries in the past have been centers of knowledge for the entire community. If you're the least bit curious about anything in the world or in the universe, the library is the place to go. So obviously, if the funding is cut, then our citizens will suffer tremendously with lack of proper education or the avenues to pursue the kind of education that's necessary. Now locally, of course, the funding for our Jacksonville Public Library comes from more than one resource, one being the city funds. That's the major funding source. But the money that we get from the state, that's called state aid dollars, are dollars that come as a result of the federal dollars that are allocated to the state. So those are the dollars that we're speaking about that would be eliminated. Now, what that means for the Jacksonville Public Library is, first of all, we have a program called the Summer Learning Program. Everyone knows that when students are out of school over those few weeks, the what's called the summer slide takes place. And what we do at the public library is try to fill that gap. And we have some epic and phenomenal numbers about successes of students who have been able to overcome the summer slide as a result of the funding that we've received from the state aid dollars. And so, and then, you know, there's this myth about libraries just being stuffy stacks of books. Well, obviously it's not. The library today and the library of the future is composed of several databases and online resources. These are the dollars that we use to fund those databases. So, and I like the word that Julie Todaro, our president of the American Library Association, she calls the librarians the original search engines. Well, those persons who assist you in the library can assist you with using the search engines that are funded by those dollars that come from the federal government through the state. And then something that's very popular, popularly known, is the interlibrary loan, the collaboration that we have with the academic libraries that are within the city so that access to books and materials are available. But more importantly than those particular programs that we're speaking of, what's so vital to our Jacksonville Public Library are those funds are used to fill in the gap for the items that we need for facilities maintenance, items that go beyond what the city dollars can provide for us. And to bring that on home, if you walk into a library and you sit at a table and the table needs replacement, we use those dollars to replace those tables and chairs. We use those dollars to buy the equipment for our smart classrooms, et cetera, so that our patrons can have the up-to-date equipment that's needed.
And so, Brenda, if President Trump's wishes are granted by Congress and all funding is eliminated for the Institute of Museum and Library Services, they administer the Library Services and Technology Act, which is you've been talking about all of the impacts of that. How will our local libraries survive, or will they not survive without this funding?
As I hear the thunder rumbling in the background, it will be the perfect storm. We have been in the Jacksonville Public Library system in a situation of declining dollars over multiple years. Although in the last couple of years, maybe some bright spots, some restoration of hours, thanks to a city council and our mayor's department, our mayor's office, we've had some restoration of dollars, but the elimination of the dollars from the federal government would just severely impact the kind of programming and City of Jacksonville budget support that we use those dollars for to enhance our library services.
And so we'd still have libraries, but with far fewer programming inside the libraries. Is that
exactly
a good way to put it?
Exactly. And the equipment that invariably will need replacement because of the use would lag. And, of course, how happy would you be to go into the library, and you'd need to use some equipment and it's just not working, and you'd have to go around to several libraries to find what you need that is actually working. So, again, the perfect storm.
All right. And as we speak with Library Board Member Brenda Simmons-Hutchins, what do you think about the Trump budget and their proposal to eliminate funding for the nation's libraries and museums, along with Arts, Humanities, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting? We want your calls, 549-2937. Lots of calls. Let us know your thoughts. Nancy in St. Augustine. Hi, Nancy. Good morning.
Good morning. I believe that this budget is an assault on knowledge. And we all know, as Trump has said, he doesn't read books. We know he doesn't understand anything about history, doesn't believe in science, or truthful media. So he's just going to eliminate it. And this country can't afford to be dumbed down any more than it is.
All right, Nancy. Brenda, I know you agree with that. Not everyone calling you might. Are you trying to drum up support for people to join librarians in lobbying their representatives over this issue?
Absolutely. And, of course, yeah, I think you do have the website where people can go and find their congressional representatives. It's www.govtribe.us/congress/members. And you can enter your address and you can find your congressional representatives and citizens. We're asking you to contact them and let them know how important it is to not cut these dollars, because education is the hub, it's the hallmark of this free society.
Peggy in Fernandina Beach. Hi, Peggy.
Hey, how are you, Melissa?
All right, thanks.
Yes, well, as you may know, I was on your show a while back, but I've retired from the Library of Congress, but I sit on the board of the Florida Humanities Council and the Amelia Island Museum of History and the Friends of the Fernandina Beach Library. This issue is really important to me, and I think people need to know it's not about the money. The money is so minuscule. All four of those agencies rolled into one. Their entire budgets make up less than 0.0024% of the federal budget. It's so small that on the budget pages, it comes out as a big fat zero. And so all I can think of is it's a war on culture. It's a war on intellectual inquiry and a war on artistic creativity.
Now, Peggy, You've seen these budget battles before. What do you think about the, and Brenda, you too, about the idea, the notion that this is a political statement from the Trump administration, and that when the actual budget horse trading gets going in earnest in Congress, we won't actually see these cuts? What do you think about that argument?
That is my hope.
Peggy, you go first, then Brenda. Peggy.
Oh, okay. I really think that this is a time we've never seen before where all bets are off. Of course, we've been over the years, the arts have always been up for cuts. No one has ever really suggested eliminating all four of these agencies together. If you put them together, you realize it is a war against the rural and small town America, with the nonprofit arts and culture organizations being the ones who will not survive. Of course, big, you know, Hollywood, New York, and the big money making organizations, you know, Beyonce will be fine. You know, that's not what we're talking about here, and people don't realize how important that small seed money is. For every dollar invested in the arts and culture, $10 at least is realized at the local and state level. But you need that seed money. You need that affirmation at the national level that it's been judged to be of the highest quality. And that's, you know, something I just don't know at this point what's going to happen.
Well, Peggy, thanks for the call. I'm going to put you on hold, Peggy, so we can take your number for further discussions. Brenda, go ahead.
I was going to say to Peggy, we're kindred spirits, because I also sat on the Florida Humanities Council board at one point. And so, again, these agencies like the Humanities Council and public libraries are, again, bastions of knowledge for our citizenry. Take this number into consideration. There were 3.4 million total visits to the library, to the Jacksonville Public Library, last year. Imagine those numbers of people not availing themselves or being able to avail themselves to the resources that the library can provide, the books and materials. We use those dollars to purchase the books and materials that are available. And without those, then these people will not be served. And
Brenda, a lot of people use the library to look for work as well, people that don't have access to computers. What about that part of funding? What about you mentioned issues with funding the technology that's available?
Yes, those search engines that we spoke about. And the thing that I do want to bring out as well is, you know, people begin to say all the time that this is the age of computers and people don't need libraries and they don't need books, but there are scores of people in our society who don't have computers at home, who need to come to the library to search for jobs, to provide the research for small businesses, for startup businesses. There's just a plethora of information that is available and the resources right there in the library through the technological resources that would be eliminated as a result of not getting this funding.
All right, and lots of tweets, lots of comments on Facebook, very strong emotions over this issue coming in to us here at the show on social media. Here are a couple of tweets from listeners. Here's one from Kingsley. Surprise, the president, with no need for facts, creative thinking, or general knowledge, wants to defund libraries and museums. Adam tweets the show, this is so disgusting, I cannot even formulate a response other than to keep writing, tweeting, and calling Congress and protesting. Hashtag resist. On Facebook, Laura writes us, a society without culture is as good as dead. We want to know what you think about the Trump budget and the proposal to cut all funding for libraries and museums in this country. 549-2937. Melissa in St. Augustine. Melissa, good morning.
Good morning. I have two comments. My first comment is I'm a mother of two under three, and I just have to say that our local library has been a very valuable resource to get out of the house, to do, you know, things for the kids that they really enjoy, and to meet other people in the same boat as me. And my second comment is, with how much the president is spending to go to Florida every weekend and the money that Melania Trump is spending to stay in New York, it far exceeds what we would be paying for the arts programs. And I just don't understand how conservatives in Congress can back a president and his budget like this when it so clearly, you know, undercuts their values. And, you know, as a liberal, obviously it undercuts mine, but I just don't understand how people agree on this at all.
Okay, thanks, Melissa. Brenda Simmons Hutchins, people of good faith can certainly disagree about budget priorities. What would you say to those? And as yet, so far on the show this morning, we're getting a lot of outrage about this, but what would you say to people who like these line items being cut out? They think, hey, we don't need to be spending money on these priorities.
If you think education is not important, then I don't have anything to say. I can't have work. I'm an educator. I've been one, you know, my entire life. I don't have words to say to one to someone who would not think that libraries and museums are a priority. It's the center of our culture. It will help us translate and transmit our culture from one generation to the next. So, you know, I cannot even speak about someone or to someone who cannot see that education would be a priority and thus funding libraries.
Let's go to Eden on the South Side. Hi, Eden. Thanks for holding. Go ahead.
I have two comments, and they're going to be quick because I got to go into work soon. But I'm a museum studies graduate student, and we talk about things a lot in our classes, and it's been shown that less federal funding leads to less personal donations because cuts in the programs, the people who would be interested in donating don't see as much confidence in the museums and libraries, so they're less likely to donate. And my second comment is that with all the standardized testing and stuff going on in schools, kids need a better way to learn, and history and the arts and sciences, all that's available in museums in a fun learning environment. So to cut that would be just tragic.
Thanks, Eden. And so many calls, Brenda. Let me get a few people more who've been holding on the air to voice their views. Sue in South Mandarin. Hello, Sue.
Good morning. I think that as somebody who thinks that the libraries are just books is really pretty short-sighted. Every day in our local library, the school buses pull up, and a lot of kids are there using the computers and using the resources. It's an extension of the school system to a great extent. And in the summer, programs for kids are available in the local libraries that keep them busy and give them something to do. But for those of us who grew up with free libraries, Carnegie libraries, we are educated in the libraries. We found resources that weren't available. Now there are an enormous number of people, as we've heard, who don't have access to computers. Their access is through the library, not only for jobs, but to do research, to learn in general. It's such a short-sighted thing. The library is as much as JEA is to our neighborhoods. Closing or limiting resources, as we have already done with ours, is like cutting back the power that people have available to them to learn and to expand and to have a good life. It's just really short-sighted, but it is almost a battle against knowledge, because knowledge helps us understand the world around us, and perhaps we're not being encouraged to understand the world around us by the people we have elected.
All right, thanks, Sue. Again, Brenda Simmons Hutchins, the nation's librarians are not really known for being advocates and warriors on Capitol Hill, but it sounds as though that's what's about to happen. There's mobilization around this, correct?
Correct, and that's a misnomer. Of late, with all of the activity that's gone on with a slow economy and declining budgets, librarians have come to the forefront and have been battling on local, state, and now the national level. And that's why I called it this perfect storm that we have in front of us that just goes against the grain of everything that we know. I do want to make a statement, too, about our Jacksonville Public Library making access even more available to our young people. There was a pilot program through our Jacksonville Public Library to provide library cards for elementary school children, and it worked so well. And, of course, with our staff having to invite and provide tours for all of for the second graders in the Duval County Schools, that really stretched the staff beyond measure, but they did it. Now we are providing library cards for all students, K through 12, in our public school system. So, again, we're on one end providing the ticket for these students to be able to access the materials, and then on the other end.
And Brenda, we need to jump in and raise a little money for ourselves. I wanted to thank you for letting us hear your thoughts on this as outrage ensues, at least among our listeners, librarians gearing up for a marathon effort as President Trump proposes to eliminate all funding in this country for libraries and museums, federal funding. Brenda Simmons Hutchins, board member with the Jacksonville Public Library, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll be back in a moment with more to delight and inform you. But right now, we need you to give us a call. Here's how.
Give us a call at 353-9528 or 1-800-722-9528. Or you can go online at wjct.org. Good morning. I'm Kevin Mershart, producer for First Coast Connect. Here we are having a great conversation about funding and what you choose to listen to. Now, if you spend your time just listening to news programs where hosts match your opinions, you've heard of those, and maybe support particular viewpoints, you don't really get to learn a lot. Then basically, all that stuff is doing me sitting there with you. Now, what we do is We bring you information from all around. I mean, I'll be on their First Coast Connect. I'll answer some phone calls. And sometimes people call in. We had a couple of people call in who hung up, who actually had a differing opinion on some of the things we were discussing today. And that's fine. We'll be more than happy to bring you on. That's the idea. We want to have a conversation about the important news of the day. And we are here to serve you. We are here to bring you as much information as you can get. It's as simple as that. But that's made possible because of financial support of listeners like you. So how about becoming a sustainer at $120 or $10 a month? That's real simple and easy. You just ask us and you say, hey, I want to become a sustainer, put 10 bucks on my credit card, and then you don't have to worry about it anymore. We know you are doing your part. Make that call now, 353-9528. Don't forget, you become a sustainer at $10 a month or $120 get one-time gift. You'll qualify for the choice of our 45-year anniversary T-shirt designed by Echo Saunders, or you can have the Public Radio Nerd shirt that also has our WJCT logo on it. So you can be wandering about town and let people know proudly that you are a sustainer of WJCT. Make that call now, 353-1528.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
I'm Joshua Johnson. Next time on 1A, tax reform. We're told President Trump is driving the train and Paul Ryan is on board.
We want this to be the last tax season Americans have to put up with this broken tax code.
Can this big ticket item put the administration back on track? The future of our tax dollars next time on 1A. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
WJCT Public Broadcasting, the City of Jacksonville's Military Affairs and Veterans Department, invites you to The Wall That Heals, which honors Vietnam veterans, April 13th through 16th at Metropolitan Park. The wall can be visited 24 hours a day, open and free to the public. To find out how you can volunteer or submit your pictures, visit wjct.org/stories of service.
Welcome back. Well, did you know that just one organ donor can save up to 8 lives? That's a pretty powerful reason to consider registering as an organ donor. More than 119,000 men, women, and children in the U.S. are on the National Organ Transplant waiting list, waiting for that life-saving transplant. In fact, every 10 minutes, someone is added to the list. On an average day, 77 people receive organ transplants in this country, but thousands more never get the call saying that a donor has been found to give them a second chance at life. But it's easy to become an organ donor. In fact, April is National Donate Life Month. With more about how you can do this and also a big local event encouraging organ donation, we welcome Catherine Oschel, MD, with the Mayo Clinic Department of Transplantation. Dr. Oschel, good to see you.
Good morning.
Good to see you. And also with us, David Caples, founder of the Katie Caples Foundation and the upcoming Katie Ride for Life. Good to see you too, David.
Same here. Thank you.
In a moment, we'll talk about the importance of organ donation to so many Americans. But first, David, let's talk about your daughter, Katie Caples, and why her story is so central to this whole issue of organ donation. Tell us about Katie.
Well, Katie was on her way home from school, and she had an accident, and we lost her after a great ordeal of trying to keep her alive. And as a result of that event, we decided to create a opportunity for people to be able to make a contribution to others who might need organs that perhaps without a donation, it wouldn't be available.
And that's because your daughter, after she passed away, she became an organ donor.
She did.
And how many others did she help with that final act?
Five
people. Mm-hmm. So you created the Katie Ride for Life as a way to celebrate organ donation.
Very much so.
And we'll talk about that in a moment. But first, Dr. Oshel, you're a nephrologist and you specialize in kidney disease and kidney transplants.
Yeah.
This issue of organ donation is something that's vital to what you do. Finding those life-saving organs makes all the difference for your patients.
Absolutely. The Katie Caples Foundation does a great job of providing organ awareness and promoting organ donation. And the Mayo Clinic really relies on their work, their hard work, to perform the over 6,000 transplants they've performed since they started doing transplants here in 1998.
And it's really striking to see that on any given day, several dozen people will get an organ transplant, but thousands more are waiting on a list. They're just waiting and hoping someone will become a donor and so that they have a chance to live.
That's right. You gave the statistic that there are nearly 120,000 people waiting for organ transplants. Of those 120,000, nearly 80,000 people are waiting for kidney transplants.
Right. Now, David, contrary to popular belief, you won't automatically become an organ donor if you check that box on your driver's license. What's the best way to ensure that you become an organ donor?
Well, I think it's important that that you do sign up.
You should still do that, but that's not all you should do, right?
Well, there are all sorts of endeavors that you can be involved in that will ensure that exposure.
Aren't you supposed to inform your family of your desire in writing so that your wishes will be honored?
Is that the best way? Very much so.
So you'll be talking about this at the Katie Ride because April is National Donate Life Month. It's a good time to consider registering as an organ donor. Tell us about what's happening this year with the Katie Ride for Life.
Well, at the Katie Ride, it's going to take place on Saturday, April the 22nd. It is an event that we have celebrated each year since Katie passed on. And we're expecting about 1,000 riders this year. This is a bicycle event, and it's an awful lot of fun and a joy of a day. And so it's one of our major fundraisers, and also to begin to educate or embellish all of the background about how important it is to be an organ donor.
Now, this will be a ride all over Amelia Island. The Katie Ride also has a walk and a fun run, even a triathlon. It's a beautiful route through state parks and nature preserves, coastal views. People get to do the ride, and they can register to become an organ donor at the event, correct?
They certainly can.
Excellent. And it's katierideforlife.org. Meanwhile, Dr. Oshel, what else do you want our listeners to know about organ donation?
Well, just as we were mentioning, there are a lot of people waiting for organ donation. So I want people to remember that they can be living donors as well. And if they want to find out more information about being a living donor, they can go to the Mayo Clinic website, mayoclinic.org/living donor.
And what's the difference? Define living donor.
So a living donor is a family member, a friend, a close relative who makes a decision to donate a kidney to somebody. They can do it to somebody they donate to somebody they know or somebody they don't know, which is an altruistic.
My mom's passed away, and so is my aunt, who was diabetic. But my mom donated one of her kidneys to her sister when I was a little girl.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that's something that it really is an act of love.
It is.
And so, again, go to Mayo Clinic's website to learn more about National Donate Life Month, katierideforlife.org to be part of the Katie Ride up on Amelia Island. Founder David Caples with us. David and Dr. Catherine Oshel with Mayo Clinic, thank you both so much for sharing this again with our listeners. And have fun.
Thank you.
We will. Thank you.
We'll be right back.
Crazy in love's how you got me feeling. Crazy in time. The narrative about a lot of Rust Belt cities, like Erie, Pennsylvania, for one, is that they're down and out and hungry for jobs. Narratives, though, are often incomplete.
It's just kind of crazy. I don't think we would have had this level of growth in a short amount of time if we were located somewhere else.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, the new Erie PA. That is next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
And the guy in the pink shirt is kind of clenching his fist. And I'm thinking, I'm a social worker. I've got a lot of experience in drug addiction and group therapy. There's a group of us here.
Join us next time for the Moth Radio Hour. True stories told live from the Public Radio Exchange, PRX.org.
Saturdays at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Independent music transcends genre, form, and age. At Indie Endeavor, we endeavor to shine a light in the little explored dark corners of your musical imagination. Everything from new to old, foreign to domestic, electronic to acoustic, we play it all. Indie Endeavor, Tuesdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT.
What is Winner? Her name is Julie Brannan. Yes, the JU English professor fulfilled a lifelong dream recently when she appeared on the popular long-running game show Jeopardy! Now, in December, Dr. Brannan's dream came true when she participated on the show and the program aired. She was a two-day champion on Jeopardy! And after a whirlwind trip to L.A., she's back in town and talking all about her experience with Alex Trebek and her fellow contestants. Dr. Julie Brannan, good morning and congratulations.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for inviting me.
So exciting. Now, you filmed your Jeopardy! Appearance in December, but you had to keep it quiet until the shows aired this week. That must have been so hard.
It was.
Not telling anyone?
No, it was really hard. I just had to smile and say, wait and see a lot.
This is so exciting. You won $28,400 the first episode, $18,600 the next. Pretty good money.
Yeah, it was pretty surprising and kind of mind-blowing.
You didn't expect to do that well.
No, I was just really happy to go. It was just exciting to be there. And I thought, you know, great, if I'm there, I get third place. It pays for the trip out. I'm good.
Now, you had been a fan for years. Yes. You'd always watched and guessed the answers and thought, I could yes. compete on that show, right?
Yeah. I tried out about 10 years ago and didn't get called up at that time. And, you know, just sort of life intervenes, and then decided to go for it again and got lucky this time.
You went over to Tampa to do the audition?
Yeah, this time I was in Tampa. And first you do it online, and then if you pass that, you get called for auditions.
Now, I heard they put your name on a list and mm-hmm. told you, we may or may not call you yes. over the next year.
18 months.
Next
yeah.
18 months. And then yeah. at the very end of that 18 months, you got a call?
Yeah, my 18 months was almost up, and I got a phone call, and they asked me to come out.
Oh my gosh, were you? You must have been so excited.
I was, but at the same time, it was very hard to get too nervous about it because I had so many arrangements to make to go.
Okay, so you get out there, you're under the lights, you're in the hot seat, and you have to press the button at the... One thing I've noticed on Jeopardy! Is if you don't time it exactly right, you don't win.
Yeah.
How hard is the timing when you have to press the button at the exact right moment?
It's a real challenge because there is a set of lights that come on right when Alex is done speaking, and then you have to buzz in when the lights come on. But if you're too fast, you get locked out, and you just kind of...
That's yeah. maddening.
Yeah.
Now, you also told, I think, the Times Union, when you would watch the show at home, you'd think, why don't they just bet it all?
Yeah.
But then when you got to that point, you didn't bet at all.
Yeah.
You hedged your bets a little.
I did. It was weird to be up there. Usually at home, I'm like, oh, just bet everything. Who cares? You know, it's not real money, whatever. But when you're standing up there, like suddenly,
all of a sudden that money's real.
It's real money. And you get a little conservative.
So speaking of your winnings, mm-hmm. almost $50,000.
Yeah.
What are you going to do with the money?
We haven't really decided yet. We're going to kind of see how much Uncle Sam takes out first and then sort of figure out where we're at. But definitely some things need to be done to my house. So
home improvement, always a good investment.
Yeah.
What's it been like for you on campus with your students and fellow faculty members now that they know you're a Jeopardy winner, you smarty pants?
Well, they've been great. It's JU is really a family, so it's just kind of fun people congratulating me, and it's been really humbling. And the students have been a lot of fun, and it's been good.
Well, now, what were some of the questions that you got right? Do you remember them?
I don't know. I do remember one where I was really struggling to get out the right name. It was a question about a Roman poet who had written things during, you know, pre-Christian times, and then again showed up in a later work, and it was Virgil, but I started to say Ovid and had to really like check
Everyone
myself.
Knows it's Virgil,
well,
Dr.
Yeah,
Brannon.
Duh.
Jeez.
But
did you get it right?
I did. I was able to sort of squeeze out the right name at the last second, but I kept thinking the wrong guy. So
did you get something wrong that you later went, I can't believe I got that wrong?
Multiple times.
What, like, yeah. What, does anyone, nothing, it's all a blur now, isn't it?
It is.
It's all a blur.
I don't remember any specific ones, but I do remember that several times I said it, and then I thought, no, that's the wrong answer. So
what was Alex Trebek like?
He was very funny and likable. You don't really get a lot of chance to talk with him in between takes and such, but he was very charming.
Oh man, so exciting.
Yeah, it really was.
Well, it's great to meet you. It's great to hear all about your experience. Local Dr. Julie Brannon, chair of the English department at Jacksonville University and Jeopardy champion.
Yay.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
It's great to have you on the show. And in a moment, a little live in studio singing from Streisand tribute artist Sharon Owens. That's next.
On the next Fresh Air, punk rocker Laura Jane Grace talks about how transitioning from male to female affected her music, her fans, her marriage, her daughter, and her own identity. Grace is the founder of the band Against Me. Last year, she burned her birth certificate at a concert in North Carolina, saying, "Goodbye, gender." Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
I'm Jessica Palumbo. A journalist's work revolves around the truth, finding it, verifying it, and reporting it. Great journalists work hard to find the facts and put those facts into context. Public radio journalists are credible and trustworthy. That's why you listen, and it's why you should give. As WJCT celebrates 45 years on air, say thanks with a contribution of any amount at WJCT.org.
Put your hands together.
On the next Jazz Night in America, Georgia Ann Muldrow.
33 years old now, about as silly as a 9-year-old, vegan, black power, every hour, and I love jazz, you know.
The singer brings her take on Charles Mingus to the Kennedy Center with an all-star band led by Jason Moran. I'm Christian McBride, and that's on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Thursdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, she has toured the world as a singer and dancer, opening for everyone from Willie Nelson to Loretta Lynn and more. But now, Barbara Streisand tribute artist Sharon Owens is on stage at her own Alhambra Theater, and her performance is like butter. Everything from 60s Broadway to 70s disco and 80s films, all of Streisand's classic hits. And let me just say, she looks exactly like her. Sharon Owens, I'm kind of blown away. Good morning.
Oh, wow. Good morning, Melissa. Hello, gorgeous.
Oh, hello, gorgeous.
Yeah, hello, gorgeous.
I'm verklempt. I'm verklempt having you here. I feel like Mike Myers all of a sudden having coffee talk with Barbara.
Oh, isn't that funny? You know what?
I can't even believe it. You look exactly like Barbara Streisand.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, it is weird, isn't it? It's weird.
Yes.
It's even weird for me sometimes when I take the picture. I'm like, wow, that's amazing.
So now you became a tribute artist, a Streisand tribute artist. Was it because everyone kept telling you you resemble her so much?
You know what? Funny that you say that. I was a singer before I actually put on this look, you know? So I was singing more like her, and people would say, wow, you sound a lot like Streisand when you sing.
And that's a great compliment.
Well, it was pretty neat to sing. It's a wonderful thing to be able to sing Streisand music all the time, because it is wonderful music.
Oh, sure. Now, so you decided, okay, I'm going to develop this act.
Right, right. Well, it's a little bit of a story, because I was in Los Angeles in a cabaret theater, and I was spoofing her.
Oh,
so it
really?
Was, you know, it was a cabaret style. So I know I'm using my hands even. You're looking at my nails.
You even have her nails.
I know.
My mind is blown. You've even got the Streisand manicure. It's incredible. Okay, so you were spoofing her, and then from that...
I was spoofing her, and and when the run finished, the three-month run where I was going, you know, he touched me, and going around and rubbing all the bald heads in the room, one of the people in the cast said, you know, you should do this for real. There is a show called Legends in Concert in Las Vegas. And I said, nobody does this. Nobody, puts on a wig and it acts like someone else. And they said, yeah, they do.
They do.
It's a big thing in Las Vegas. So I started perfecting it and not spoofing so much and being a little bit more authentic, I guess, if that's what you want to call it.
Well, you're on stage now at the Alhambra Theater. So exciting. It's a short run, only April 5th through the 9th, tomorrow through the 9th, an enchanted evening with Barbara Streisand. She's tribute artist Sharon Owens. And we have a little music, The Way We Were, I believe, that we're going to play if you want to. I don't want to mess up your hair.
That's
okay. But
if
you want to put on the headphones, maybe we can listen. And can you sing a little bit for
us? Oh, sure.
Like the corners of my mind, misty watercolor memories of the way we were. Can it be that it was all so simple then? Or has time rewritten every line? If we had the chance to do it all again, tell me, would we? Could we? Memories may be beautiful.
You want me to keep going, huh?
No! Let's give her a round of applause! Oh, my gosh!
No, I'm just teasing. I'm just laughing.
You are incredible.
Oh, that's funny.
She's Sharon Owens. Fantastic.
Oh,
thank you for performing for us.
Go see
her show live at the Alhambra Theater, April 5th through the 9th. It's an enchanted evening with Barbara Streisand. AlhambraJacks.com for tickets. Can we go have some coffee?
I know. Let's go have some coffee. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
I mean, I should have sang Rain on My Parade.
I know, right? It'd be a perfect song for today. Let's hope for the sun to come back out. And as we keep listening to this beautiful music, here's how you can support 89.9.
Give us a phone call at 353-9528 or 1-800-722-9528. Or you can go online at wjct.org. Hi there, Kevin Mersch, our producer for First Coast Connect. Here we're able to bring you a great program like today. We talk libraries, we talk Jeopardy, we talk Katie Wright for Life, and, of course, then we had a nice star spin here in our studios. We always like to do that. One of those things, we like to do a little more of is to get more musical artists who are coming into town, and particularly local artists, local musicians, to come out and perform, because we know that's the kind of thing that you enjoy. That's the helps to provide the culture here at WJCT and 89.9. We also will often take our guests and do a little record for them on our Facebook page and our WJCT page. You have performance there. I think we call it a Studio 5 performances. It's great stuff. We've had so many different artists come on and talk about their what they do and perform for us. It's just been fantastic stuff. And it's made possible because of you. Listeners like you showing your support is what we're able to do to bring you programs like First Coast Connect every day. So if this program is important to you, make that call now. 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528, or go online at wjct.org. Coming up on 1A, our newest program that was sort of came into replace after Diane Rehm retired at the end of last year. It's had a pretty good thing. Lots of people have been commenting on 1A. It's a different approach. It's certainly not the same as Diane Rehm. They do it differently, but that's okay. Because still, you can get a conversation going on about what it is going on in the world. And it's made possible because of listeners like you. We have very tough standards here at WJCT when it comes to our journalism, just like NPR does. We have a code of ethics, accountability. If something happens and NPR gets a story wrong, they don't just say, well, we got it wrong, sorry. No. What they do is they go through and look and say, okay, what went wrong? What do we do to make sure this does not happen again? Not all broadcast affiliates out there do that. When they say, we got something wrong, well, sorry. They say, no, why? What went wrong here? How did this get on the air if it shouldn't have got on the air? That is the standard that you expect from us, and that is what you're going to get from us. It is made possible because listeners like you enjoy the support of what we bring you. We bring you these things. It's not easy to bring you great news from all around the world, but we're able to do that because of you listening to this program, showing your support for the financial support of this program. I mean, it used to be enough to hear news from just like maybe Washington or New York, but then we just give you a hill coast on and say, well, the local stuff you guys can handle, and around the world it's a little tougher to do that. No one spends more time covering news from around the world than National Public Radio. No one really does. They have people all around the world covering stories all the time. It is made possible because of you. So get that phone call now, and thank you for your support. 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528, and thank you.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.